Welcome to Water of the Word, the radio ministry of Pastor Steve Hadley of Harvest Family Fellowship in Reno. Join us today as Pastor Steve looks at today's events already foretold by God's Word. The Bible stands alone. No other book in history has such specific and detailed descriptions of the world we live in right now. So come on along. May we all be refreshed and inspired as we are washed by the water of the Word.
We're in part three today of Prophecy Update 2017. Jesus was answering the question of the disciples. He had come back in the triumphal entry. He's teaching the disciples and he's talking about the end times and the very last days. He has some rather challenging notions to share with the rabbis. They move out of the Temple Mount down the Kidron Valley east this time to the Mount of Olives, potentially even to the Garden of Gethsemane. And then a private briefing ensues. You know, Lord, you're talking about some wild stuff there. Hey, when will these things happen? When will you return? And when will be the end of the age? Three powerful and potent questions. And then Jesus answers that. He literally outlines the seven seals of the book of Revelation. And then he says something quite provocative. The generation that sees Israel become a nation again, that through the metaphor of watching the fig tree bloom, the generation that sees Israel become a nation again will not pass away until all of these things, what things? All up and including the book of Revelation, until he returns, chapter 19. When Jesus returns in Revelation 19 to physically stand on the earth and begin the seventh millennia, the millennia of rest, there will be humans alive who saw 1948. Last week, go ahead, we talked about the prophetic feasts of Leviticus chapter 23. There are the seven feasts of Moses. Three in the spring, one in the summer, and three in the fall. They're beautiful and rich with history, culture for the Jewish people. But have you noticed, what day did Jesus die on? The Passover, when the blood of the lamb was daubed on the doorpost and the lintel in Moses' day. And then God says, do this every year, don't ever forget it. And he was the unleavened bread, didn't have any sin. He rose on the feast of the first fruits, as we saw last week. First fruits is you bring that in the spring and you wave at the Lord, and the Lord promises, thank you for being faithful. There will be more of those harvests to come. Powerful imagery. Jesus is the first resurrected new body. And he is a prototype of us when we get our new bodies at the rapture. Well, then what about feast number four? Was that prophetic? Yeah, that's the second chapter of the book of Acts. When was the church born, y'all? On Pentecost. Where are we on the prophetic feasts? I think the next great event is probably the rapture of the church. Go ahead, our next slide. Elam, if you're now in Jeremiah 49, read with me, join in verse 34. Jeremiah, who is said by the Lord that he is going to be a prophet to the nations. He was certainly a prophet to Israel, of course, and the job description that he answered in the paper that day, wanted by the Lord, a prophet to Israel. Condition, no one will ever believe you. He told them about the idolatry. God's going to send Nebuchadnezzar. They didn't listen. Starting at chapter 46, roughly to chapter 51, Jeremiah has prophecy for all the nations that surround Israel. And I want to show you one today that might be rather provocative. How many of you know where President Trump is? Anybody? He's in Saudi Arabia. What's he doing there? Well, he just tied up about $100 to $200 billion defense spending bill that they're going to buy some of our stuff. The monarchy of Saudi Arabia, they are entertaining more than 40 heads of states of the Arab and / Muslim countries around. Monday, he is due to be in, anybody know? Fernley. No. In Israel. What's he going to do there? His daughter, Ivanka, is married to Jared Kushner. Jared Kushner is now one of his main advisors, a senior advisor. If you get into the Jared Kushner history, his grandfather and grandmother are survivors of the Holocaust. His father began quite a real estate empire. Jared joins the family business, a Harvard graduate. But before he graduated from Harvard, you know where he went to high school? To a Jewish yeshiva, which is a Jewish training school in New Jersey. His father was a big part of that. He is trained in the deep things of God and the orthodoxy of the Jewish understanding. His father and Benjamin Netanyahu are such good friends that on a couple of occasions, years and years ago, Benjamin Netanyahu stayed at Jared's father's house. Jared moved out of his bedroom, slept in the basement, and Benjamin Netanyahu slept in his bed. So? Can you imagine that? Is there a more than casual connection of the Trump family and the Prime Minister of Israel? Remember how we said that May 14th, 1948, Israel became a sovereign nation for the first time since 606 BC? May 14th of this year, they had a birthday, Israel did. They celebrated their 69th birthday, which means this whole next year will be the 70th year. Psalm 90, verse 10. Let me quote it for you. The days of our lives, not the soap opera. The days of our lives is 70 years. Generation. And if by reason of strength, maybe 80. This is the 70th year of the nation of Israel regaining her sovereign nation and statehood back for the first time since 606 BC. Does it mean anything? And this Wednesday is the 28th day of the month of Iyar. And I'm probably not pronouncing that right. But the 28th day of the Jewish month of Iyar. So, that's the 7th of June, 1967. The birthday of Jerusalem coming back within the borders of Israel is going to celebrate it in a day called Jerusalem Day. Wednesday will be the 50th anniversary of Jerusalem in the hands of the Jews. Where in the world is our president? In Jerusalem! And what, if anything, will he do there? Go ahead, go to our next slide if you would, Rick. Candidate Trump said, March 20th, 2016, before he was elected, to the American Israel Public Affairs Committee Policy Conference. Here's what he said, quote, "We will move the American embassy to the eternal capital of the Jewish people, Jerusalem." A rousing applause and standing ovation ensued for the next several minutes. When the room was quiet enough for him to continue, he said, "And we will send a clear signal that there is no daylight between America and our most reliable ally, the State of Israel." Did you know that in 1995, October the 24th to be precise, Congress, really the Senate, passed a bill. It was championed by then Majority Leader Bob Dole. Does that ring a bell? Is that a blast from the past? The Clinton administration was moving headlong with a two-state solution, their idea of peace in the Middle East, if you can remember. Meanwhile, the Congress passed a bill. 95-5 in the Senate, it passed. And 374-37 in the House. Bills don't get passed with that kind of overwhelming support. This one did. And it was basically saying, move the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv, which is the politically correct place. If America ever moved her embassy to Jerusalem, that is us categorically stating and standing with this impossible notion in the minds of many that the United States recognizes Israel, but also recognizes that her capital is Jerusalem. And as you know, many people are trying to make Jerusalem an international city. After all, it's the headquarters of three of the world's major religions, by and large. In 1995, your Congress said, do it! But because of tremendous pressure from the Clinton White House, Bob Dole added something to the bill. And basically what it is, okay. The president can sign a waiver every 6 months to postpone the moving. So every president since Bill Clinton, every 6 months, has signed the waiver. Okay, not this six-month period. Okay, not this six-month period. Candidate Trump promised that he would not sign that waiver. Will he make such an announcement Tuesday or Wednesday, Jerusalem Day, with his good and dear friend Benjamin Netanyahu? As you know, candidate Trump, that was one of his typical campaign promises. King Abdullah II of Jordan, he said, you can't move the embassy. You can't do it. Because if you did, that's a red line, quote, regarding the two-state solution. Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian president, he's saying, are you nuts? You can't do that. Jerusalem is not the eternal capital of Israel. It is an international city. And if the president were to do so, Abbas said, quote, that's a declaration of war. The international community that will, quote, sink the two-state solution. There's another thing that candidate Trump said practically every campaign stop along the way, but I will quote you from that same conference in 2016. Next. This is again March 20th, 2016, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee Policy Conference. Quote, candidate Trump said, my number one priority is to dismantle the disastrous deal with Iran. I have been in business a long time. This deal is catastrophic for Israel, for America, for the whole Middle East. Dismantling Iranian nuclear deal? How many of you remember our then Secretary of State, John Kerry? He put together a little coalition that is known today as the P5 plus one. U.S., Britain, France, Russia, China. Who was the plus one? That was Germany. By the way, the Russians have contracted with Iran already to build two more nuclear power reactors. There are two what are called light water reactors in Iran at the current time. How many of you remember Netanyahu was here under the Obama administration and he visited and spoke to our combined Senate and House in the House chamber? Obama wasn't there for some reasons. Secretary of State wasn't there for some reasons. And Vice President wasn't there for reasons as well. He's standing in the same podium that you often see the president on his State of the Union addresses. But instead of the president of the United States standing there addressing the joint House and Senate, it was the Prime Minister of Israel. And if you will, if you'll forgive me, the King of Israel was standing at the seat of American political influence saying, will you stand with us? if you might recall, and his eyes followed the main aisleway between, as it were, left and right, Democrats and Republicans. And his eyes lifted up to a medallion staring him straight in the face that was placed there at the construction of that portion of the Capitol building all the way back in the late 1800s. And it's a medallion featuring the likeness of Moses, the lawgiver. And the foresight of the legislative body at that time, confirmed through the architecture of the remodel and the expansion of the combined House Senate chambers, inside the place where all the laws of America would be debated, passed, or declined. And they put there an image of the lawmaker Moses. And the king of Israel looked at that medallion and said, "Who will stand with us? Don't do this deal with Iran. Stop their 19,000 high-spinning centrifuges, which are separating U-238 and uranium, making something called yellow cake, which is the beginnings of the making of fissionable material, a.k.a. nuclear bomb stuff." Our president said at the time, no, let's just limit them. And also jumping on board, as I said, all these people, Britain, France, do you know who helped build one of Iran then, under the Shah of Iran, who helped build their first nuclear reactor was the French. And then the Russians, the Chinese, and then the Germans. You know who helped build their second, in Bashir, their nuclear power plant there was the Germans. As I said, Russia has contracts to build two more plants. And by the way, China, what's China doing? Do they have a vested interest in Iran? Well, yeah, China buys more of Iran's oil than any other consumer, almost by double. U.S., Britain, France, Russia, China, and Germany. Do any of those people have a vested interest in not making the Iranian regime there unhappy? Is there any real possibility that the international community will not restricting the number of centrifuges, but take them out altogether? Not, you can only develop so many intercontinental ballistic missiles with the capability of carrying some of these warheads, certainly to the region and potentially even across the pond, as they say. Not stop, not eradicate, but let's just contain. Are they ever going to roll that back? Now a quote from Benjamin Netanyahu in 2014 when German Prime Minister Angela Merkel visited, 2014, he said this, quote, "The goal is to prevent Iran from having the capability to manufacture and deliver nuclear weapons. I believe that means zero enrichment, zero centrifuges, zero plutonium, and of course an end to ICBM development. Because none of these elements, none of them, is necessary for the development of civilian nuclear energy." That's what he said to our joint House and Senate. And did that Congress, then more Democrats than Republicans, and of course the President Obama at the time, did the nuclear bill get passed? It surely did. Freed up sanctions and over billions and billions and billions of dollars of frozen assets, and Iran promised that they would play nice after that. If you didn't know, Iran founded and state sponsors terrorist organizations Hezbollah to the north of Israel and Hamas to the south of Israel, who now, of course, control the Gaza Strip. Iran has been playing with state-sponsored terrorism in Syria. They are cozy with Russia, as you know. Candidate Trump said, "We're going to take that deal apart." Back to the P5 plus one. In 2013, a couple of years in front, Obama said, quote, "We've halted Iran's nuclear program and rolled it back. from 19,000 centrifuges to 9,000. 2014, the Iran nuclear deal was extended because it wasn't inked yet till after the midterm election. As you know, Republicans gained the upper hand at that point. Iran received $2.8 billion in frozen assets that were released to them. Israel is calling for the dismantling of Iran's nuclear program, not containment. Russia has contracts to build two more nuclear plants. China is Iran's number one oil consumer. October 2014, Khamenei tweeted, if you don't know, his 11 lines. Here in the West, you were getting reports from the negotiating process, John Kerry. So Khamenei, the religious leader of Iran, is telling the Western press one thing, but he's saying something quite different to his own Arab world. He released something called his 11 lines, line number 8. We're going to have us 190,000 centrifuges. Doesn't matter what this deal says. Is that a lot? 19,000 centrifuges is enough to make nuclear weapons-grade plutonium in about 8 weeks' time. 190,000 of them is enough for 38 nuclear payloads per year. Are you still in Jeremiah? Is anybody sleeping? Is everybody okay? Jeremiah chapter 49, verse 34, prophecy against Elam. Go ahead, our next one. There is modern-day Iran today. See, to the bottom left of the frame, you'll see Saudi Arabia, of course, and then there's the Persian Gulf. A bit of land jutting up from underneath. It squeezes the Persian Gulf there to about 20 miles wide. It's called the Straits of Hormuz. 80% of Middle Eastern oil comes from the oil-producing countries to the north and Saudi Arabia and so on. And it has to go through the Straits of Hormuz, a pinch point. Iran has threatened on a number of occasions to close off the Straits of Hormuz. And if they did, who would really be in trouble? Used to be the United States, but we, of course, have found oil reserves and natural gas reserves aplenty, even within our own borders. North and South Dakota, one of the big ones. But you know who would be really and tremendously affected? China would be. Go ahead and hit the go button. That is Elam. Elam is a different and distinct kingdom, and it actually is older than Persia, which Iran would become in the middle of last century. Elam is mentioned in the book of Genesis, chapter 14. It was kings from Elam that helped to kidnap Lot, Abraham's nephew. We find out that they were excellent archers, says the book of Isaiah. They take their launchers and let forth their missiles with great effect in the Old Testament. Elam is different. I don't know if you can tell, but the top of the orange section, you'll see a mountain ridge there. And that mountain ridge is called the Zagros Mountains. That's no mountain range to sneeze at. That is the border between two huge plate tectonic or seismic plates. That's why in Iran, there's all of these earthquakes. Did you know that Iran is 90% seismic? Elam currently, as you can see there, is about 20% of modern-day Iran. It's separated by those practically insurmountable mountains. They would be similar, I suppose, to the Rocky Mountains, I suppose, that separate the U.S. West from the U.S. East. And so that's why Elam was somewhat separated from the Persian society. Elam contains two of Iran's only two nuclear places, as you see them there. The one is the Darkhaven, and the other one is Bushehr. I want you to notice where they're located. They're located near the Persian Gulf. That makes sense, because to keep the very hot, molten, practically, nuclear core cool, you need lots and lots and lots of water. So that's why they put them there.
You've been listening to a recent prophetic update by Pastor Steve. What a comfort to know that no matter what the headlines are saying, everything is proceeding just as God has foretold. If you missed any of today's message or would like to hear it in its full, unedited format, you can watch this or any of Pastor Steve's teachings at our website, just visit us at harvestreno.org. That's www.harvestreno.org. Come join us Sundays at 10:30 and Wednesday evenings at 6:30. Harvest is located at 350 South Rock Boulevard in Reno. Until next time, Pastor Steve encourages all of us to follow Acts 2:42 and Word, Worship, Prayer, and Fellowship every day.
How marvelous, how wonderful is my Savior's love for me.
May the Lord bless you and keep you as we are washed by the water of the Word.